do a lot of public speaking, and I talk about my journey from homelessness teenager to CEO. What was life-changing for me back then was that I actually got a different perspective on what life could be like. And I remember him talking to me and showing me a different pathway, or showing me what life could be like, and then deciding in that moment that I was not going to be a statistic, that I was going to change.
One thing that really stood out for me, which I thought was really relevant in today's climate, was that you led companies through a global financial crisis. You took a company from 38 million to 55 million in under 18 months. And I read that and I went, wow, and how?
And I would actually say that that sense of responsibility for self has probably been the biggest catalyst for my success.
Caroline Kennedy, welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast. I am honored to be sat here with you today. Could you give a little bit of an overview into who you are, your journey? It's been quite the journey. I was doing a lot of research before we jumped on today, into who you are, your background experience, and what's brought you here today. So Caroline, over to you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, Georgie, for having me. It's honestly, it's an honor to be here. So my journey, it's an interesting one because I do a lot of public speaking and I talk about my journey from homelessness teenager to CEO. And so I grew up in adversity many, many moons ago now, decades ago, but the odds were against me creating the life that I have. And I remember when I was a teenager and I ended up in crisis accommodation for the disadvantaged vulnerable youth. And what was life-changing for me back then was that I actually got a different perspective on what life could be like from a counsellor. And I remember him talking to me and showing me a different pathway, showing me what life could be life and like, and then deciding in that moment that I was not going to be a statistic, that I was going to change my life and my journey and be the master of my own destiny, I suppose. And from that day forward, I set out with what I would call courage. So the courage to step forward every day, even though I didn't feel comfortable or confident or feel like I was capable. And I made decisions that were really challenging and outside of my comfort zone, and then started to build my career. So my first career was as a hairdresser, really interestingly. And I always talk about that I was able to, I cut George Harrison's hair. So that was like my claim to fame. And then I started working in resort environments and was really curious about different work and sales and being a sponge and just wanting to learn and grow. And through that came opportunity, and I received opportunities, or I put myself forward for opportunities, you know, working in restaurants and then managing restaurants and then getting into conferencing and sales and then diverting off into travel and tourism, and eventually led my first CEO role was leading a travel wholesale business, and I led that through the global financial crisis when travel industry was being disrupted, and still was able to deliver some fantastic results, and then went on to lead a franchise business in the building industry. And again, stepping out of my comfort zone, knowing nothing about building. And then I felt like I'd reached the pinnacle of my career and thought, what's next for me? And what I really loved about my journey was tapping into human potential. And that's when I decided that I wanted to work with other individuals, coaching them to be the best version of themselves. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I will start by saying this, Caroline. If anyone should be coaching people, it should be you. That story of you going from homelessness to a CEO is truly one of the most actually inspiring things I've actually ever heard. And
what I always find fascinating about human beings is the ability that some have to use their disadvantage to their advantage and go on to achieve incredible things that you've done, versus somebody that's always in that victim mentality and goes on a very dark path. And you said something really interesting as well about that career consultant that just gave you that statistic and you decided that's not going to be my path. Can we just go back to that? Because that was a really key moment in your life. And had that not have happened, your life could have, you know, almost like sliding door moment, right? Because I think there's so many people in the world right now that are struggling, that are in these positions they don't want to be in. And I think you always have the chance and the opportunity to turn your life around. And I'd love to really understand and dig into like what was actually going on in your mind at that point, because I think that's incredibly powerful for anyone listening in a bit of a challenging situation right now, and how you got yourself out of that situation.
Yeah, well, I think if I look back on it, I was just scrambling. I went into that environment for the disadvantaged, vulnerable youth, or that home, feeling very unloved, unlovable, feeling lonely, feeling like there was nobody there inside and out, which was really interesting. So I felt empty and I was searching for something. And I remember Alan, his name, so he was the counsellor, and his job, I remember him challenging my thought process continually. Like, I probably went in there very much with a victim mentality, because that's what had been role modeled to me, and him challenging that, and then me getting a different perspective on life, and then realizing that life doesn't need to be that way. And it's really interesting because I talk about this a lot, and I know it's really simple and life isn't quite that simple, but I do say there are two types of people in the world. One, people who take responsibility for themselves, and we all go through difficult times, but we decide that we're going to get through that no matter what. We're going to have resilience. We're going to fall down. We're going to get back up. We're going to have people say things about us, judge us. So we're going to, that's part of life, but you have to have the resilience to be able to realize that that shouldn't stop you achieving what you want to achieve, and you're responsible for yourself. Nobody else is responsible for you. And then secondly, that victim mentality is the other side of the coin, which is everybody's to blame. It's all external factors, and I have no control over my life. And I suppose that's what he taught me the most, is that if I want something, it's up to me to go and get it, that I'm responsible for myself. And yes, you know, I had a shitty childhood, and a lot of people do. But in that moment, I decided, you know what, it doesn't need to be this way. I can change it, and I don't need to be what was role modeled to me, and I don't need to be a statistic. And therefore, I take responsibility. And I would actually say that that sense of responsibility for self has probably been the biggest catalyst for my success.
I think that if the podcast stopped there, I think, boom, mic drop. Because I totally agree with you. And this whole taking responsibility is a really tough pill to swallow. But when we don't take responsibility, we feel powerless, don't we? Because we're just blaming everybody else and the external environment, the economy, the job, my boss, my this, my that. And then we don't ever move forward. We don't ever stand in our own power and realize, what am I capable of? And however challenging it is to take responsibility for everything in your life and where you are right now is because of the decisions and choices you've made, however challenging that is, it is such an important step before you take another step to sit in that and realize that I have to take responsibility for my life and where I want to go next. So huge, such a powerful, powerful thing to do. So once you had taken responsibility and you decided that you, wanted to make some of yourself. You obviously got into hairdressing, which is really interesting, because through that industry, you would have met so many people. Quite similar when you were talking then, I was reflecting, I was a beauty therapist when I was in my teenage years. And I think what that made me able to do was meet a lot of different people and have lots of different conversations. And I was always a curious teenager, and I was always asking questions, well, what do you do? You know, what does your job entail? And I think it definitely opened up my eyes to what sort of opportunities and careers and what people did and how much money they earned. So talk to me a little bit about that. Like, was there a certain moment or a certain person that you met that was really, a moment for you to be like, oh, wow, I want to be like this person? Or did you sort of meet a couple of role models? Because I think it's really interesting, because I do remember meeting a number of really like incredible women during my time in beauty that kind of made me like reshape my reality to be like, wow, that's what's possible. So curious if like that was the same for you.
That's a really interesting question, actually, Georgie, and it's making me reflect, because I think when I was hairdressing, and I actually got a scholarship to do the hairdressing, which I was really fortunate, but I worked hard and I proved myself, and then they invested in me through this scholarship. And the scholarship was part of a larger organization in Brisbane. It was many, many years ago. And I remember the owner of that business walking around, and she owned quite a few of the salons as well. And I remember her name was Lena, if I remember that correctly. I remember watching her thinking, wow, how is that even possible to own all these hairdressing salons? So it wasn't necessarily even the people that I would meet in the hairdressing salons. It was more aiming really high and thinking, I thought it wasn't possible. Now, there are many times that I thought things are not possible. And what I realized that if I don't think things are not possible, then I'm not setting my goals high enough, right? And so at that moment in time, thinking, I don't know if this is possible. But then, and being the top salesperson in that environment as well, like I was always just driven to achieve. And then realizing that, well, if you want to make it happen, if you want to be a business owner, go and do it. And I'd always envisaged having salons, but that's not what eventuated for me, because then I got an opportunity to go out and work at Ayers Rock Resort through a friend of mine who was a hairdresser, interestingly. And she had gone out there, and I thought, why not? So I quit my job and off I went to Ayers Rock Resort to work as a waitress when I didn't even know how to set tables. And I remember turning up on my first shift and they said, can you set the table? And I'm like, I don't even know how to do this. And it's the simple things, because I didn't have a role model mother, right, that would teach me these things. I didn't know how to set a table. When I look back, it's so funny, the simple things in life were just, sometimes they are taken for granted. And in that moment, as a nearly 20-year-old, I couldn't even set a table. But that was the catalyst for me realizing that I don't know what I don't know, and I want to be curious about what I don't know, and I want to learn and I want to grow. And so curiosity is a big part of that. And then I just took that curiosity into all of my endeavors or my experiences, and I think I still do. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really important, that curious mindset, and always seeking why is it this way, asking questions, how could it be done differently. I think that's a really, really powerful approach to anything, your career, business, like all sorts of things you could apply that to. So I think that's really important. Also having the courage to put yourself out there and just say yes for experiences. Again, like, these are all things that shape you and shape your personality and have definitely molded you into the woman that you are today. But when I was reading through your LinkedIn profile, one thing that really stood out for me, which I thought was really relevant in today's climate, was that you led companies through a global financial crisis, and you took a company from 38 million to 55 million in under 18 months. And I read that and I went, wow, and how? Because that is pretty incredible. Because again, when there is, like, I think we can all probably agree that we are in a recession at the moment. You know, there has definitely been a bit of a downturn in the market. And a lot of people running businesses right now are in panic mode, are in fear, aren't hiring, like just sort of like, oh, we just need to play it safe. But you've proven here that there was a huge opportunity for growth. So how did that happen? I'm really curious into like how you sort of achieve that, because I think that's incredible. And I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this right now that would be really curious into how you made that happen.
Yeah. So when I was offered the role by the board, we were going through difficult times, you know, global financial crisis. And I remember when they asked me and I thought, oh my God, this is a big task. The business was actually going backwards at the time, because not just was there a GFC, but then there was also the industry, the travel industry was being disrupted by online travel, and we were a traditional wholesale business model, right? So I thought, oh, our competitors were closing their doors. And I thought, do I really want to do this? And then I was like, yes, I do, because I'm always up for a challenge and I will never let anything beat me. Well, you know, within reason. And so I looked at pragmatically, what are the market conditions? What are consumer buying habits? What's happening in the market? Where is technology? What's at play with technology? And how do we leverage that? So I'll give you a couple of examples. A traditional wholesale travel agent business model at that time was you take a booking from a travel agent, then you'd go off to a supplier in Europe, and it could take days for them to confirm whether or not you could facilitate that reservation and what rates, right? It was quite static rates. They weren't dynamic, but the market was shifting to dynamic rates. So then I thought, okay, what's technology out there that we can quickly move with? And we brought in an API, and we facilitated an API model, which was then connected us through to those operators or those suppliers, and we got instant confirmation and we got dynamic rates. Now we moved on that really quickly, so that we could meet the market demand. Now, a lot of our competitors didn't do that. Another example was when you go into a travel agent, they have brochures on the wall, and there was our brochures, which was our biggest cost to business, but our competitors would have brochures too, and it was a big cost for them. And you were reliant on the travel agent to give out your travel brochure over anybody else's, right? So you didn't have direct contact with that consumer. So you're relying on that third party. And I thought, how do I problem solve this? It's our biggest cost. I can't physically get them in the hands of the consumer. I need the travel agent to do it. How do I create an environment where the travel agent wants to give my brochure out over everybody else's brochure? So then I used technology again, and I went and sought out a gentleman who was using augmented reality. He'd worked in Silicon Valley, and he helped create the Google glasses that they had at the time. And I connected with him and I said to him, we need to do something quite revolutionary with these brochures so that they stand out and have a point of difference. So what we did was we used this augmented reality to create a vision of what the consumer would experience whilst traveling. So let's say they wanted to go to France, and we had an app, you could use your iPhone or your Android or your iPad, and you'd put it over the actual app, you'd sign into the app, and up would pop a visual of this experience that you're going to get when you're away in France, right? And it was quite revolutionary at the time. But one thing I wanted to achieve is I wanted the travel agents to have a point of difference and a talking point to hand our brochure out over everybody else's. So that was achieved, tick. They handed them out, and they handed them out left, right, and center. And then secondly, when people put their iPhones or iPads over the app, they actually needed to enter their details, which then filtered back through us. So we were then able to continue to build on that database and build on communicating with the consumer direct without needing a third party. So it actually had a double whammy effect. And so the brochures went out, the sales skyrocketed, and then from there we were able to continue to communicate with the consumer. And so it's just one example of, if you look at a problem within a business, what's the biggest problem? How do we turn that into an opportunity based on what's going on in market, or where is there a technology that exists that we could leverage to be able to give us a competitive advantage? And so there's two examples of what I did. And I didn't just use technology. I also looked at, feedback and collated feedback, and also patterns in the feedback that we were getting, and made sure I solved the problems where I saw a continual pattern.
That's so impressive, I have to say, Caroline. When I was hearing you speak then, it really is those problem-solving skills that set a lot of business owners, leaders, entrepreneurs apart of what is the problem we're trying to solve? Where is this business lacking innovation? Where is it? Where's the cost? Where can we disrupt? How can we continue to innovate so we're not out of business in 5-10 years' time? That approach and that mindset is so entrepreneurial, so forward-thinking, so innovative. So I want to applaud you for that, because I think people listening to this that are working for businesses, are running projects, or are thinking of starting their own business, that problem-solving mindset is so important in business, because I've never, ever met anybody in business or running any project or anything that has not come across challenges. And I think what sets people apart is the ability to go, how can I move forward with this? What can I do differently? And what you just said then was just such two incredible examples of how you took a problem and you found not only solution, but a solution that made the business a lot more money and a lot more successful. So that's such an inspiring story. The one thing as well that I really think that, again, sets a lot of people apart, entrepreneurs and leaders and CEOs and just anyone that's doing a great job in their career, is you talk a lot about that whole accountability piece. And what I've really struggled when I was first starting out on my own entrepreneurial journey was I'd gone from being an employee where I had a list of tasks to do every day, right? That's what I need to get done in the day. My boss was saying, right, Georgie, what's your plans for today? This is the goal. This is what we're doing. And I was kind of like, I guess, told what to do. Whereas day one, business, no boss, no one coming to check up on me. It was quite daunting. And I realized that, oh my God, I'm accountable for me. So what's that journey been like for yourself? And any advice for how do we keep ourselves accountable when we are like the leader, whether it's a team of a business, like how do you keep yourself accountable to do all the things that you say you're going to get done each week? Love to know if you have a process or any thoughts on that.
Yeah. So there are two elements to that for me. And the first one is, I find really interesting with what you just described, Georgie, is that you had your list of tasks and your boss told you what to do. And it's one of the key things I teach executives is hold people accountable to themselves, right? If we can tap into people's thinking and pull out their thinking and help them level up, that's holding people accountable. That's giving people what they need, not what they want, right? So I think that leaders have a lot to answer for in terms of teaching people to be accountable first and foremost, right? So there's a lot of they direct, they tell. What about if you ask or you question? And you can ask specific questions to get an outcome from a person and holding them to account for bringing their best version of themselves, right? And that's what creates high performance, and that's what creates curiosity. So I just want to add to that. And secondly, the question that you actually asked me was, how do I hold myself accountable? And for me, it's always been, what do I want to achieve? And I'm really clear on that. I've got clarity in my own business. Now, that would be, I want to grow by X, Y, and Z, or I want to, so for instance, last year, my business grew 87% from the year before, and my profitability grew as well. And I knew exactly what I wanted to achieve. Now, I overachieved on that, but I know that that's what I want to achieve. And then I break it down into bite-sized pieces. So this is the amount of clients that I need. And it might be that there are business clients and there are executives, and just so I get diversity. And then I start to think about when, and I don't necessarily work with everybody who comes my way. I'm very selective in terms of who I want to work with and what outcomes they want, because impact is also really important to me. So then I think about what's the impact I can have here, but everything's broken down into bite-sized pieces. And I know how many inquiries I need, how many phone calls I need to have, all of that. And every day I just work towards making sure I'm monitoring and measuring. Am I hitting those milestones? What do they look like? So that's from a business perspective. And then from an impact perspective, if I choose to work with, like, so for instance, a good example was I had a gentleman come to me. And he said he was a CFO in a business, and he said, I want to be a CEO. And we looked at, okay, well, what do you need to do to achieve that? He was a very, very smart man, is a very, very smart man. He runs at 100 miles an hour and forgets to bring people with him, right? So we knew that we needed to teach him to not just lead with his heart, but with his head. He needed to have more executive presence, and he also needed to be a leader that lifted people up. So we started working together. My job then is to hold him accountable so that he achieves what he wants to achieve. So it's giving people what they need, not what they want. And then eventually he became COO and now he's CEO. And I remember the day he called me and he said, you've made me a CEO. And I was jumping up and down. My husband thought it was very funny, because I felt like I had won the grand final for me. They're the kinds of things that that's why I do what I do, but it's also why I'm accountable, why I love having an impact. And it's just having clarity. That's it. Clarity on what you want to achieve and break it down into bite-sized pieces so that it's measurable and you can monitor it.
Yeah, that is so powerful, Caroline. And I think, yeah, it's where I've probably gone wrong in the past. When you were sort of speaking, I was reflecting then as well, is that I have set goals. And then when I have achieved those goals, if I haven't then thought about the next goal, that's actually when I start to not hold myself accountable and I can kind of just coast. And just as you were thinking, then I thought, God, yeah, when I'm working at my best, it's when I am working towards something that is almost a little bit scary, that it kind of, I know I need to just be like, you need to be on here, George. You need to be accountable. You need to be maximizing each day, showing up as your best self. How important, and I'm, because you work with a lot of, I imagine, very ambitious people, A players, A type personalities, right? And you say that word of clarity, I think that's the first thing you need to do. But say someone's really clear on a goal, they hit that goal. Do you find a lot of A players, and I'm speaking from my own experience here now, because I've definitely experienced that, it's like, do they hit a goal and then go, oh, what's next? And how important is it in our life to have constant goals and to be ever evolving? I'm just curious, as you were talking then, I was thinking, that is so important. Because that's what holds you accountable. But then when you achieve the goal, what's next? Have you come across that in your work?
Yeah. So this example that I was talking about before, when he became CEO, he then, he was in a state of, it was new, but he was also, you know, euphoric about stepping into the role and then doing the role. And then there became a point where we were talking about, well, what's the next mountain? You don't just stop now, because you get the job, you actually have to then deliver, right? And you have to deliver the next mountain. And he set some pretty big goals. So then we were talking about, well, what does that next mountain look like? What scares you? What do you want to achieve? And how are you going to get there? And it's always about building that. It's even when you level up with your business or you hit a milestone, it's like, well, what's next? What's next? Mm-hmm. And it's always building that next level, if that's what you want. That's the other thing I want to say as well. Not everybody wants to do that, and that's okay. And also, too, motivation's really interesting because I think you have to connect to why you're doing what you're doing and what you want to achieve. But also, if you show up one day and you're not motivated and you're having a flat day, that's okay too. There's no right or wrong. As long as that's not the consistency that you're showing up with all the time, there are days when I don't show up as the best version of myself for whatever reason. And I know not to pass judgment on myself, because when we get into that cycle of judgment, we start beating ourselves up. And that's what A-type personalities can do. I didn't do this. I'm not this. I know. And then we become our own worst enemy. Yeah. And we actually have the opposite effect. So operating really consciously is critical. And I talk about that all the time. Know what you're saying to yourself. Know what you're thinking. And are you saying the right narratives? If you're judging yourself, that's not a good narrative. That's not a positive narrative. It's okay to not show up 100% and say, you know, today I'm just going to rest. I'm going to be kind to myself. And then leave the judgment at the door, because that will hinder progress.
100% yes. I love everything you just said there, and I was smiling because, oh, that's me. But do you know what's really interesting, Caroline, as you were speaking? I've really done a lot of work around not tying my sense of worth and identity into the work I do. And that's been a really, really big journey for me. And I'm not saying I've got it down pat, because I don't. I still, if you know, if something goes wrong at work, I'm like, oh, having a moment. But it's definitely got a lot better than where I was even a couple of years ago, where if something went wrong, I would beat myself up. And I think there's a difference between taking responsibility and being overly self-critical and judgmental of yourself, because like you said, you're not going to get anywhere doing that. And then you actually lose the motivation, and actually you can end up going backwards, which is really interesting. And probably something that I did maybe experience, to be honest, even a few years ago. I was always sort of battling that, what do I want to achieve? And then if I have one of those days where I was like, I'm just not feeling this today, I would beat myself up, force myself to do it, end up doing it half-assed, and then not enjoying it. And then the motivation was actually starting to lack a little bit, because I wasn't allowing myself the time to rest. Yeah. And, you know, we're not batteries. We do need to be recharged like batteries, basically. We're not robots. We're human beings. But when you were speaking then as well, you said so many amazing things. And one stat that really interested me when I was doing my research, that some of your posts, was the stat around 8 million Australians feel dissatisfied with their lives, and only 8% achieve their goals. And I was just like, I had actually take a moment when I read that and was like, wow, that's a lot of people. What advice would you give if someone's listening to this right now and going, I am unsatisfied. I really don't like where I am. I don't like my career. I don't like my boss. Like, what's the first step for these people? Because 8 million, that's so many. I can't even fathom that. So, any advice to people that are in that 8 million and that 8%, like, what would you have to say to them?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And there's another stat that I want to add to that as well, is that if you compare the population versus how many people reach the pinnacle of, you know, career success, whatever that level is, but in corporate world, it's only 0.2%, which is nothing. thing, right?
Wow.
So scary. And there are many reasons for that. And a lot of people don't want to, and that's okay too. You don't have to want to achieve all the time or to be at the top of the corporate ladder, as they say. But if we go back to your question, I think for me, it's really operating consciously, right? And this is what I think the biggest work that I do with individuals is about operating consciously, because there's the cognitive behavioral cycle, which goes round. So our thoughts, what we think, create our feelings and then create our actions and our behaviors, right? So if we think, I hate my boss, I hate my boss does this, I'm expecting my boss to be this great leader, he's not a great leader, but I expect him to do this and I expect him to do that, or I expect her to do that. And all I stay in is that thought around the expectations of others, or the boss is not, he's not the best boss. I expect that he should know how I'm feeling. He should know what I'm thinking. I hear this stuff all the time. And then I say, hang on a minute. Your thoughts create how you feel and how you then behave and then take action. If you keep that loop just going round in circles, you're never going to take any action. So it's really important to break that cognitive cycle and to operate consciously. The only, and the expectations of others as well, I think we're expecting people to be something that we're putting our expectations on them. What right do we have to put our expectations on them? If you're not getting what you want in the environment that you're in, if you're not thriving in the environment that you're in, if you're not performing or the environment doesn't allow for it, change the environment. Decide that I am responsible for myself. I'm the master of my own destiny, and I'm going to take small actions to be where I want to be. Because if the environment doesn't allow for you to thrive and you remain in that environment, well, you're probably going to go backwards in terms of your health, the physical, mental, whether you end up in a, where you're burnt out. But if you stay there, then you're making a conscious choice to stay. And that's a choice. So you either decide, well, I will, I choose that, and then therefore I choose the consequences of that. Or I decide that I'm going to break a pattern and I'm going to take action, small action, to facilitate change. And all you need to decide is that if I'm really dissatisfied, then I'm going to change it. Now, I'm not saying that you're going to decide today that, you're happy in your, or you're unhappy in your job and you're just going to quit. That certainly isn't, not everybody's in a position to be able to do that. But what you can do is take a small action towards getting the outcome of a new job. I'll get my CV done. I'll have a look at what roles are out there, what companies I might align with. I'll send my CV to them. I'll have a discussion. Any of that means that you're leaving your job, right? They're just discussions. They're just actions. When you find the right environment, then you can make a choice to leave your job if you're unhappy. Or you can make a choice to start your own business, whatever that may be. But you've got to understand, what's the outcome that I want and how am I building back from that? What actions do I need to take to make that a reality? But the first step is operating consciously and knowing what you're allowing to ruminate in your mind. And is that serving you or is it not?
Really powerful. There's a quote, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Joe Dispenza's work, but he says your personality becomes your personal reality. And that has stuck with me ever since I've heard it. And it was like, wow, mind blown, right? Because you do get those people and they're always negative. There's always a problem. There's always stuff going wrong in their life. And you go, well, no wonder, like, because you're just constantly reinforcing, like you said, that thought, that feeling. And what's really interesting as well, kind of when you were speaking then, is I think sometimes as well, again, going back to this whole responsibility piece, we actually need to think to ourselves, is it the employer, the company, or is it me? Because I've worked in recruitment now for 10 years, and there's a pattern with certain people where they seem to be job hopping. One job, one job, one job. And you think, well, not every company is toxic. So when do you know, okay, maybe it's not the employer, maybe it's not my boss, maybe it's not this new company, maybe it's me. At what point do you think that we need to look at ourselves and hold a mirror up and go, actually, I'm chasing all of these external changes, but maybe I need to do some work on me, because otherwise I'm literally just taking myself and my problems into this next phase and it's just nothing's changing. How important is that internal change before we make external changes? Because you've done it beautifully well. You're a walking, talking proof of that. And what could be the first step for somebody that's maybe thinking, maybe it is me. What should I do now?
I think the answer to that is awareness. We have to want to be aware. We have to be open to awareness. I'm constantly evaluating how I show up and what that looks like without judgment. I often tell a story, particularly around ego and humility. So many, many years ago, my ego probably would have been triggered quite a bit because I was trying to prove myself and to prove, for whatever reason, that I was really good at what I did, right? And so I was always trying for that external validation. And then I realized, actually, how is that serving you? Do you need it? And no, I don't need it. And what's it causing you? And there's many manifestations of needing external validation, which I won't go into, but then realizing that actually that's how I'm behaving because I have a lack internally and therefore it's causing X, Y, and Z. So I need to go and so awareness was the starting point. Then I had to decide, how am I going to work through this? What does that look like? What is it stemming from? And it's those behavioral patterns too, right? Because I think for me, a behavioral pattern to achieve was it was tied to my identity in those early years. So every time that I showed up and, you know, drove people to be, and again, being a leader, that wasn't a very good leader back then in my earlier career, but I wanted to drive people to success so that they, so that I would achieve. And then realizing that actually that's not serving me as a leader. I'm not the best version of myself. Actually, I'm a really crappy version of myself. And therefore, that's all driven by ego. How do I operate with more humility that serves people? So it's that awareness around, where are you now? Where do you want to be? Is your behavioral pattern serving you? And if they're not, what are you going to do about them? But you need to be aware of them in the first instance. And I constantly do that evaluation to be the best version of myself. And interestingly, what I've realized is that now I operate from a place of being so light and at peace, whereas I was quite tormented decades ago. And I see that journey in the people I coach as well. But they have to want to change the patterns that no longer serve them. And that is that awareness. They might not even know what the patterns are, and that's okay. That's what, you know, I help them to conclude, but it's wanting it. And then other people do not. I recently had an experience, and it's very rare that this happens, but I recently had an experience where or an individual had come to me and she was struggling, and I could hear the struggle, but she just didn't want to be aware of how what she was thinking. She was thinking very much about it was everybody else, and she was saying, this person made me feel this way. And I said, I can hear that. That would be a horrible experience to perceive that that's what's happening to you. But how does somebody else make you feel a certain way? Can you choose to feel differently about it? Why are you taking it on? What can you, how can you, is that with them? Is that their perspective? Are you taking on their perspective? And therefore, it doesn't mean because they say, give you feedback, that that is 100% truth. You've got to sift through all the feedback because everybody has their own perspectives based on how they see the world and the lens that they see the world through. So it's really important to operate and to just be aware. So that's that conscious, go back to that conscious, operating consciously, being aware and being aware that we're not perfect. There's no wrong or right. I am who I am right now. That doesn't mean that I can't do the work to show up a better person tomorrow. I just have to be open to it and aware and to not allow that judgment. I mean, you can even hear when I tell my story, I wasn't a very good leader at the beginning of my career, but I don't bring any judgment to it anymore. It was what it was. I wasn't the best version of myself, but that's evolution, right? We all evolve and we all develop. And it's saying, I look at myself and I know that I have patterns, but I'm going to decide what I choose to focus on.
So powerful. And I'm sure if you also do Dr. Joe's work, he is also very big on identifying with a future that you want to create and not living in the past, and how a lot of people, and look, myself used to be very much included in this, wake up every day and they connect to a past that they don't want to be in, and they're just replaying the tapes over and over again, judging themselves, criticizing themselves, and that then becomes their reality, and they try and change their current reality as the same personality, and you can't do that. And you're so right, Caroline. The first step to change is being aware of something, and then you have the power to change it. I'm conscious of time. So before we wrap up this incredible conversation, I could honestly have you on for about 2 hours, I think. I could just go on a tangent with you. But I'm just really curious. Like, I imagine there's people listening to this right now that, you know, maybe would love to reach out to you, would love to get some coaching, you know, with you and help them identify their patterns and their beliefs and help them take the next step forward. Are there any patterns that you've noticed over the course of your coaching career, being a CEO, that if you look at someone, you go, you're going to be successful. Is there any particular thing that you've noticed, or a characteristic or a personality trait from all the people you've worked with over the years and coached, that you go, if they've got this, that's key and it can be developed? Anything that just sort of springs to mind. I'm always curious about what makes someone successful and others, you know, are always trying but never succeed.
Yep, that's a very powerful question, Georgie. And I would say what sprung to mind is, and I always follow my instinct in, and I was thinking about a few people in particular, but is being multidimensional. Now, that sounds like a big term, so I'm going to explain what that is. That is showing up and thinking about different perspectives, different dimensions to something, and not just being one-dimensional, which is I show up not considering my audience. I show up not considering the perception or the perspective of somebody else. I show up and I'm questioning things. I'm questioning and I'm curious. I bring empathy. I bring decisiveness. I'm accountable. Like, there are many elements to that multidimensional, but I'm not just one-dimensional. And you'll see it in people. You can actually see whether people have the openness to consider varied perspectives or patterns, or whether they're just anchored into this is how I see the world and that's it. And they don't question, whether it be the status quo, they just don't question, they're not curious about.
Great answer. Really, really good answer. That's really, really interesting. I hadn't thought about it like that before. I think, you know, some people would say, oh, self-belief, confidence, this, that. And it's just like, you know, that only gets you so far, right? I think, yeah, it's a multitude of skills, like you just said. It's having different characteristics, and that's super powerful. But Caroline, where can I send people to find out more about you if they want to get some advice, coaching? Where can we send them?
Yep, they can go to my website, which is www.carolinekennedy.com.au.
Perfect. We'll make sure we put the links in the show notes below. But Caroline, thank you so much. I have personally enjoyed this episode so much, and I'm feeling really inspired and wanting to hold myself accountable, and certainly going to be holding myself accountable to be the best that I can be. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. And I look forward to following your work in a lot more detail. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And the one thing I wanted to say is to your listeners and to yourself as well, Georgie, is if you could think about one thing that you wanted to hold yourself accountable for, what would it be?
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm going to go and ponder over that over my afternoon coffee. So that's an amazing question. Caroline, thank you so much. And we'll make sure we put all the links below. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Georgie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.